Welcome to the Minimate Gang Podcast for Sunday, July 19th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and I've got Tim Elliott on drums.
Hey, how you doing?
Phil Wilson on xylophone.
Thank you.
Julio Ojeda Zapata on clarinet. I don't know. And Graham Thickens on the flute.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm on a wind instrument, too. I got wind in the background.
So yeah, there you go. That. All right. Well, I figured I'd pull a rabbit out of a hat here. I didn't have a lot of time to look for music today, so I...
Is that where it came from, your hat?
It did.
I was thinking a little south of there.
Oh, man. Well, Julio, glad you're joining us. This is great.
I'm honored, actually. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
We should point out that Julio has actually agreed to join us about once a month to tell us what's really happening in the real world.
That's right.
None of this of our theory. Own little bit of eight space.
That's right. Well, we got about 4,000 topics to go into today, so I just want to jump into this right away. Steve Rebell made the change away from his blog to Posterous, and I've been playing with it a lot, and I'm intrigued by it. Not so much for a professional use like Rebell, but for personal, because I can just throw all this stuff into that feed. And what do you guys think of it? Have you used it? Julio, you have.
Well, I read Rebell's post and got really excited. Rebell switched his main blog over to Posterous, and I promptly I got very excited and promptly created a Posterous account and did a couple of blog posts, one of which consists of an essay in which I'm sort of mulling, the pros and cons of like going Rebell's route. At this point, I'm leaning more towards using Posterous as kind of a live streaming thing, kind of a personal, little tidbit out of my life kind of a thing. And it's really been kind of fun for me because I'm on vacation this week, vacation in quote marks, helping my wife build a retaining wall. So I don't have a lot of time for like really intricate traditional blogging. I can't write long blog posts. I just don't have time. But what I can do is I can grab my iPhone, snap a picture or take a video. And then Posterous, the way you post to Posterous is by email. So on the iPhone, I can just email the video to Posterous, bam, instant blog post. And I've been going crazy with this thing, and it's so time efficient, so easy to use. And my wife hasn't even noticed that I've been actually, researching the topic of my next tech column while helping her with the retaining wall. It's been really cool.
That's great. Well, and I've been doing the same thing, and I like how it takes the iPhone 3GS video and corrects the orientation. So that's a bonus. But the big thing, and I brought this up at that social media breakfast talk, the big thing I love is that I can also set it to shove those files into different places. So I want my images, for example, to not only show up in the Posterous blog, but I also want it to go to Flickr. So that's why, I was hot on it right at the beginning, because you can have this stuff go into multiple places, and therefore you're not dependent upon one vendor. God forbid Posterous goes out of business and you got all your stuff in there.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where Posterous is kind of cutting edge, because I played with Tumblr, for instance, which sort of resembles Posterous in being kind of a stripped down, personal blogging service, but Tumblr is kind of traditional in that it'll pull in, content from other places, but it won't push it out, which is kind of, the paradigm shift here. And so I've got my poster set up to tweet, to go to Facebook, friend feed, Flickr, YouTube. And with one quick blog post from my iPhone, I can let all my Facebook friends know what's going on in my life, all my Twitter friends, what's going on in my life, and my Twitter friends and my Facebook friends, in many cases, are not the same. And I can archive my photos on my Flickr feed. I can stick things on YouTube, for people to take a look at it that way. So I've been having just a ton of fun with the thing.
Tim, do you the same sort of concept? A lot of it can be done with WordPress, even though WordPress ends up as a destination. Do you do that with any of your clients? Have them either email posts in or automatically send in images and so forth?
No, not really. It's pretty much everyone goes in and either posts via the web interface or uses some sort of a software tool. But you know, the setup on for WordPress to do auto posts is somewhat cumbersome, I think, for a lot of people. And you know, it's not immediate like Posterous is, where you just email stuff in and it posts it out automatically in real time. So I find it a handy tool, and I'm starting to play around with it as well, and see that there are some great applications for this, for my wine blog as an example, where I will be able to post a lot more content there than I have been able to in the past, just because it is so streamlined, like Julio said.
All right, so you guys,
it's so easy to do, you know.
Yep. So do you guys think that, because this is one thought that came through my mind, is this the death of TwitPic and TwitVid?
No.
Because, I mean, you know, why would you send something to TwitPic when you can send it to Posterous and it automatically ends up on Twitter anyway, and then it's still in your live stream rather than being sitting on, you know, images sitting on TwitPic.
Well, I think you're assuming that everybody wants to share every aspect of their life on every different site, and I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there's a segment of the population that wants to do that. Julio is one, Tim's one, you and I are probably one. You know, we're into that I believe my niece once explained it to me as, you're one of them.
Oh,
we were talking about
really?
Facebook pages okay. that, you know, shares every little aspect of your life on so many different places. So I don't think it's the death of the individual services.
When you mentioned TwitPic, you raised a really good point. There are Twitter applications like Tweety on the Mac desktop right. and Twitterific on the iPhone that support Posterous as the default place where, like, if you upload an image and if you tweet with a picture, you know, with a picture file, you can designate, you know, where the picture is going to go, to YFrog or TwitPic, and Posterous is one of those options. So if I'm tweeting in Tweety, for instance, I can push an image up to Posterous. So my activity can be sort of Posterous to Twitter or Twitter to Posterous. It moves in both directions.
I like
that is very convenient, because sometimes I want to say something in a Posterous post, and sometimes I want to say it in a tweet, and in either case the image ends up on Posterous and then gets pushed out to all my other places. So it's very convenient.
Yeah, I think that this service is sort of like FriendFeed, at least for me and a lot of people. It's replacing the RSS aggregator. So instead of going to Google Reader, going to read either Posterous streams or your FriendFeed stream. I think that's kind of where this is headed.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. But what do you think about, I mean, for something other than professional use. So Graham, you, for example, send out a lot of high value links. You're constantly linking to articles and all of that. Now, granted, I can go to your Twitter account and look at that. But if you're using your iPhone to take photos and sending those in, how do I find, you know, I mean, rather than link to it from Twitter, would that be of benefit to you, especially when you're at an event and you're live blogging something or you're live Twittering it? Would that be of benefit to have everything in one place?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I haven't tried Posterous yet, but if I can do like Julio just said, yeah, I'll be all over it, because I want to take photos with my iPhone. Which I do now with Tweety and just using TwitPic. And, so if what you're saying, I can now send those directly to Posterous from Tweety. Is that what you were saying, Julio?
Well, on Tweety, the desktop Mac client supports Posterous, the iPhone client,
okay.
for some odd reason, does not. But Twitterific on the iPhone does, so you can use that.
Okay. Now, Posterous doesn't have its own iPhone app.
I hope they will make one.
Me
that would
too.
Be a logical thing, because Tumblr does.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It's called Mail.
Email. That's right. It's true. It's true.
And that's what Posterous is all about. It's the aggregation of all these different features. So
you're right.
Why would you need an app if you're using Mail?
You're right.
Well,
So I will just shoot a pic with my iPhone and send an email to Posterous, and the photo is an attachment to the email?
It actually gets posted in a blog post, so it gets integrated into the post itself.
Right, but how do I send it to Posterous?
Well, the really slick thing with Posterous is, yeah, as you guys have noted, is email based. So if you, like, for instance, if you attach 10 photos to an email and then email that to a particular Posterous email address, that those pictures get posted as a photo album that you can sort of navigate. So it's very, very sophisticated in that way, and the emails can be. You can play with the email formatting. Like if you want to post just to Posterous, you can use a certain email address. If you want to post to Posterous plus Flickr and YouTube, but not Twitter, you can. There's an email address for that. There's a million email address variations that let you sort of, you know, play around with exactly how you're posting and, you know, where the stuff is going.
You know, for example, Graham, one of the things I thought about was how great it would be for you with your recorder to be able to upload an MP3, because they have an automatic player that shows up, and you could do a little couple of paragraphs around it and title it something and then email that in. Boom, you've got the thing automatically loaded.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why Chris Brogan's been doing that as he's been on vacation. He's been sending audio to his Posterous.
Huh.
So they show up as little podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Leo Laporte was doing that also with Audio Boo, mm-hmm. From China.
Yep.
On his adventure. Well, that brings us into a segue into the smartphone thing and the Apple iPhone and Android and the Palm Pre and all of that. What it's done is it's really given us incredible opportunities to upload not just text, obviously, but audio and video and imagery. And it's really changing people's dynamics with respect to what they're doing. And what are you guys seeing with your own use? I mean, Julio, you kind of mentioned what you were doing, and I'm doing the same sort of thing. And what kinds of things are you seeing?
Well, I have an iPhone on loan from Apple for a couple of months, and I've just had it in my pocket at all times. And, you know, I've always liked the iPhone, but this particular 3GS version of the iPhone with the improved camera, with the ability to shoot and upload video, has been a revelation to me. Because I've never, you know, to be quite honest, I've never been the kind of guy that carries an image capture device in my pocket to sort of, you know, take pictures as I go, you know, every, you know, little tidbits of my life kind of thing. I've never done that. With this device, the new iPhone, it's the first time I've ever attempted to do that, and I'm doing that in conjunction with Posterous. And it's been a revelation, because I can literally document my personal life as I go and, you know, and share that with my loved ones. And it's something that I've really literally gotten into in the last week or so, and I anticipate I will continue to do it, you know, going forward, because the iPhone is so convenient for that, because I have the iPhone in my pocket for other things, other iPhone type things, but then the camera is there when I need it, and so it's become my default image capture device. I'm not using any of my standalone cameras. I'm just using the iPhone, and the image quality is very good. And, you know, rumor has it Apple's going to integrate a camera into the next version of the iPod Touch as well. So that is really going to create some live streaming craziness out there. It's going to be very interesting.
Are you using video? Are you shooting videos and uploading to YouTube or anything yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I shoot, I'm shooting videos, and initially I was uploading them to YouTube. But now I can shoot a short video clip, and, you know, if I keep it within a certain length, I can then email it. And so what I'm doing is I'm emailing it to Posterous, and then it gets pushed out to YouTube. It gets pushed out to Flickr. You know, a tweet goes out announcing that the video is available. It renders very nicely on the Posterous page itself. So I've been using video and still images about 50-50, you know. I'll shoot some video of my wife using her circular saw, and then I'll also snap a picture for good measure, and then I'll push both those up.
Cool. Yeah, I'm the same way. I got to get my hands on a 3GS, because I just haven't done video very much. I kind of held off buying a Flip HD because I thought if I'm getting the new iPhone, I'll wait and see how that works for me for video. But I'm hoping to become a video uploader more frequently now. So, yeah, looking forward to that. I have to try that and Posterous, I guess.
Well, talking about the you know, the fact that you can take your Posterous site and set it up so that everything that you're uploading can end up also at other places. It can be on your blog. It can be at, your images can be in Flickr, your videos in YouTube. And that brings me into my number one hot button, which is not being dependent on any given single vendor. I was dependent on Typepad for my blog and have gone through great pain and agony to get it out, get all my stuff out of there so I can own my own data. And I now almost am done. And so I become really, really aware of it. Plus, I kept looking at all these Web 2.0 sites over the course of the last, you know, 12, 15 quarters. About once a week, I'd take a category and just go through the category and see who was around and who was not, who was in the dead pool. And man, oh man, oh man, have a lot of great sites gone out of business. And so that brings me into, you know, backing up all our digital breadcrumbs, all the things that we're doing, you know, not just obviously our desktops, but if you guys, well, I know you are, you're like me, you got a desktop machine, you got a laptop, you've got a mobile device. Are you guys, any of you using any kind of online backup services?
I had a catastrophic data loss, a very large hard drive with a lot of my stuff died, and I suddenly, you know, became a zealot about backing up, and I wrote a column about it for the paper and researched a number of options, and a buddy of mine who happens to work at Apple is an absolute zealot about a company that's actually here in the Twin Cities called CrashPlan. CrashPlan is similar to Carbonite and Mozy and some of those services, but CrashPlan, you know, has some interesting variations. Their software is absolutely free. You can download their software and use it to back up internally to a hard drive in your home, and then you can pay them if you want to upload your data to their servers. But, you know, here's the really interesting part. If you have a buddy across town who has some extra server space or some extra space on his computer, you can designate that person as your offsite backup solution and use the CrashPlan software to push your data across the internet to your friend's house, and he can do the same in the other direction and back up on your server space. In fact, I'm going to do that. A friend of mine, you know, generously freed up some space on his Drobo for me. And so I'm gonna be backing up to my buddy, you know, with the CrashPlan software for free. And you know, that it's very interesting. And the more I look into CrashPlan, the more impressed I am. There was a podcast that I'll share with you later where the CEO, the CrashPlan CEO, got interviewed and went into some fairly intricate detail about, you know, the technology behind his backup, which is very somewhat intricate but very interesting and very revealing, you know. But CrashPlan is going to be my main, you know, my backing up everything solution. But then there's also partial backup. You know, there's a certain subset of my data, certain files, like if I'm writing a book, I want to make sure those are backed up. For that, I use something called Dropbox. I think some of you also use Dropbox,
yep,
which has limited space but integrates, you know, very elegantly with your desktop. And then you can just drop things into your Dropbox folder, which is indistinguishable from any other folder on your computer. But anything in that Dropbox folder gets pushed up to the cloud and gets synchronized to any other computers that are, you know, running the Dropbox software with your account on it. So it's very, very cool.
Yeah, one of the other things is Microsoft's Live Mesh, which is kind of interesting. They have 25 gigs of storage that they give you, and I've been messing around with that, just using it as a kind of a cross-platform solution to go between my Macs and my PC, and it works pretty well. And it's, once you get it set up, it's pretty transparent. You can also buy space on Dropbox if you want. It's $10 a month for 50 gigs, which is a pretty good deal, but Microsoft's giving you half of that for free. I've been using CrashPlan, though, for a couple of years, ever since I saw the founder speak at MiniDemo, and I actually did a podcast of his speech at MiniDemo, but that was back when he was charging for it, so I actually bought a couple licenses and have it back up all the computers to my server here in the house.
CrashPlan has a standard version, you know, for individuals, and then they have a CrashPlan Pro, which is, you know, people can literally, you know, buy CrashPlan Pro licenses and then sort of go into the backup business and sort of invite, you know, their friends or their clients, you know, if they're running a business or whatever, to back up to them. So that is kind of interesting. So it's sort of a dispersed backup model. You know, everything isn't going up to the CrashPlan mothership, but rather CrashPlan is enabling its technology so people can use it, you know, in a variety of ways that suit them.
Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of work to navigate through firewalls and stuff, similar to, you know, the folks at GoToMeeting that have done the same kind of thing. So it's really simple to use. It'd be probably the only backup software that I would suggest for my dad to install because it's so easy.
Really?
Yeah. They've thought about everything.
What about encryption? Does it encrypt at your level and then send it, or does it?
Yes, and it also creates an encrypted volume on the other end. So your buddy in New York, who you've who's agreed to be your backup site, he can't get into it at all.
Got it.
So it's encrypted all the way. So it's very secure as well.
Yeah, a lot of services say they encrypt, but they're just encrypting it on the wire, you know. You're right. You got to have it encrypted at the remote location. But I want to ask, why are you using these services, you Mac users out there, instead of Time Machine? Or I assume you're using it in addition to Time Machine?
I don't use Time Machine, and I never have, because at least when it came out, when it started, you had to have a FireWire drive or I guess a USB 2 drive. And I wanted to do, you know, backup over my network and then over the internet when I'm traveling. So what CrashPlan allows me to do is have a backup server, which I operate in my house. And then when I'm here, you know, obviously it just goes right over the local network. But when I'm traveling, it actually does the backups via the internet.
Very cool. Traveling with a FireWire drive. Well, the little one I have isn't too bad, but I have to admit I often don't take it when I travel. But yeah, the FireWire drive with Time Machine is pretty slick, and it reminds you to do it every, I don't know, how often is that, Steve? Every 10 days or something? It reminds you to back up again? Or
well, it depends on what you set up in preferences, but what I do is I use it to do local backups because I've got a terabyte external. But then I also then back up the Time Machine backups to the office because we've got a file server there. So that's my offsite strategy.
That's a good one.
And I'll just set it. I just set it to do that at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Sure. I'm just using a real simple online Backblaze, which is, you know, a real economical sort of way of doing thing. Backblaze is $5 a month, unlimited storage, and that's where I'm running all of my backup to up into the cloud. And then I just have a simple, you know, a sync back program that takes it to my my outboard USB drive. So it's a much simpler, probably more rudimentary than what you guys are talking about. But again, I don't move around probably as much as you do.
But I like the idea of CrashPlan and how easy that is. I did the same thing with a woman who I know that I helped her with her site, and she was desperate for a backup plan and had been researching Mozy. And I said, well, you know, she was sold. So rather than try to sell her on something else, I helped her set that up, and it's been virtually invisible to her. And she just, I mean, that's perfect, because once it's set up, then she doesn't have to worry about it. She just knows that she's getting backed up when the computer is sitting on and idle.
How pricey is that, though, Steve? That's the offering from EMC, right? The big guys?
Yeah, that's, I'm going to have to look, but I think it's $5 a month. Yeah, $5 a month. Unlimited backup.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And it's very, very simple.
And so, but what is the offline or backup prices for CrashPlan for their server? I mean, if you don't have a friend that you're using all their storage to back up it to their secure storage facility, what do they charge?
You know, I don't know. I can actually fire CrashPlan up now and go and find out though. I think it was competitive though with other ones, as I recall.
Well, what you do with them is you buy a license. So I'm looking at their store page, and I'll put a link in the show notes, but CrashPlan plus a license, which is real-time backups, unlimited versioning, and web restore is $60. So, and I remember that was one of their big selling features is you pay us once. So you buy a license, and that's it.
It says here, oh yeah, if you look into this, the cost for a backup 50 gig is $5 to $50 a month. Interesting, gives you a different thing, different price.
You're right.
Depending on what you're using as far as the online backup. So, I don't know, kind of interesting, kind of complex.
Well, not really. The license assumes, like for instance, if you're my friend in St. Paul is going to be backing up my data, in order for me to back up to him, he has to buy a license that will enable him to offer me that consideration. The CrashPlan Central subscription is for people that are not backing up to a friend server; they're backing up to the CrashPlan mothership itself, using the MOSI or the Carbonite model. So as I understand this, it's an either or proposition. So I'm using the CrashPlan mothership, and I have free backup to that for 30 days. After that, I would then just buy a CrashPlan Central subscription and sort of keep going.
Yeah, it's $5 for a month for 50 gigs is what it costs if you back up to their central server, which is half the price of Dropbox. So that's very competitive.
Yeah.
And that's basically the same price I'm paying on Backblaze. So I kind of like the combination of being able to have CrashPlan do both my in-house and, in the cloud stuff. So kind of interesting.
Yeah.
No. Well, I was just going to say, speaking of stuff in the cloud, I've been helping some clients get set up on Google Apps for your domain, and we run that for our business. And the frustration in having people log on to the consumer applications because they have a Gmail account. And, well, how come my calendar isn't here? Oh, yeah, I got to go into the Google Apps. But it looks the same, and there's a lot of confusion around it. And then Microsoft just released Office Online, and it is a dumbed-down version compared to what you can get on a computer. But has anybody taken a look at that yet in any detail?
I haven't tried the Office Online thing yet. But I'll tell you, I've been more and more of a Google Apps for your domain proponent. I've had my personal domain name attached with Google Apps for some time now, and it's been one of those Google, you're gonna have to earn my trust over a period of years kind of thing. And so I've gradually dipped my gotten deeper and deeper into the Google pool, and at this point I'm just sold on all of their stuff. I'm using the Google Apps, I'm using Google Voice for telephony. Their stuff is updated, frequently. It's always being improved at a rapid clip. I'm never locked in. One of the philosophies with Google, I think we addressed the subject of data lock-in earlier in this podcast. And the thing about Google is that they're absolutely adamant about not locking in your data. You can get out at any time and take all your stuff with you. So that makes me feel good. And if I'm going to write something that is not a Pioneer Press article, at the office, I'll do it on Google Docs rather than use desktop word processing software. I'm just all Google all the time with my stuff in the cloud, and so if my computer crashes, I know it's all safe. I've gone that way for a while now, and I'm really sold on it.
Yeah, I use Google Docs a lot too, but one of the problems that I have is sharing, especially Word files for some crazy reason with clients, where they'll send me a Office 2007, I guess, on the Windows side, with the .docx file format, and 9 times out of 10, there's something, some issue with the way that Google Docs is trying to interpret some of the stuff. And either I get just text, or it's sometimes it's garbled, and sometimes it doesn't even import it at all. So from a opening the file standpoint, I would think that Office 2010 online is going to be 100% compatible, and it'll be a nice handy tool for that kind of thing. And it's free for individuals anyway.
Well, you know, that's probably, cause I've had the same experience with Google, with the Google Docs specifically, and a little bit of compatibility issues. So the stuff that you can do on there is usually pretty limited, but, you know, just like you said, Julio, they've slowly but surely gained my trust, even though I feel like the frog in boiling water where you keep turning up the heat and eventually the frog just boils to death. Cause I know going in that the amount of data that I'm giving them every single time I do anything, get an email, send an email, do a doc, do a search, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is building up this massive ability and database of being able to do predictive analytics around who I am and what I'm going to do and probably what I'm going to do next. And yet I haven't really noticed bad things. I haven't noticed anything with GPS on the iPhone where they're all of a sudden SMSing me an ad. You know, there hasn't been anything evil that's shown up. And, I'm going to do the same thing though with the Microsoft Office stuff. I'm going to slowly but surely look at it, try it, see what it's like for collaboration. You know, whether or not I can share a document with anybody that so that they don't have to go in and sign up for an account, which is what you have to do with Google.
And again, the whole thing with Google is if like tomorrow I decide Google is evil and they cannot be trusted and I'm gonna divorce myself from them. You know, within a day I can have my data pulled out. Their email, for instance, I can access my Gmail in the Mail app on the Mac using IMAP, and so it's all backed up locally, and then so I can sort of pull it out and put it somewhere else away from the Gmail, you know, and say bye bye to Google. I just knowing that I have that option, you know, makes me feel more secure. I have an out at any time, and I haven't had to invoke that option, but I can do that. And that is, you know, one of the key things that Google has done to sort of earn my trust and the trust of other users. It doesn't hold you hostage.
Yeah. Well, there's been a bunch of other stuff that's gone on this week. And Phil, when I heard that you were going to be at the Conclave, I went in and I did a quick search for Conclave and up came a Wikipedia article.
On the papal conclave.
The Sistine Chapel's been the location of the conclave since 1492. But I'm assuming that the conclave that you were involved in was different than that.
Yeah, it used to be known as the Upper Midwest Communications Conclave. We just shortened it to the conclave. It's been going on for, well, this was our 34th gathering. It's for broadcasters and, you know, programming. It's very much programming or content development focused rather than sales focused as far as broadcasting goes. And this was our 34th event. And I had the honor of putting together the what we termed it as the Tech Interactive Track, where we had addressed a lot of what's happening in the interactive space and new media space and how it can apply to helping broadcasters and continue to, you know, reinforce their ability to reach listeners. So I was able to, you know, put together a bunch of sessions that highlighted some of our local, as I term, stars. One was Gary Kohling from Best Buy, who did a presentation to the room on increasing the signal strength with the use of social media. And Gary did just what I thought was a wonderful presentation. You know, Gary's kind of the Miles Davis of presentations. He wanders around. But
you did a great post, by the way. I'll link to that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And he did a he decided to start his presentation with a story. He told me that every time he sat down to put the presentation together, he found himself sort of yelling at broadcasters for what has happened to radio. And he told an incredible story that all of us, I'm sure, can relate to as far as how intimate and personal radio was to his life growing up in his teens. And we all know, at least in the broadcast world, we've always known that your musical tastes are defined in your teens. And it was really interesting and I thought a very compelling presentation. And his takeaway was simple to broadcasters, is that other radio stations can take away your listeners, but they can't take away your friends, and how important it is to build that relationship with your listeners.
I love that, by the way.
Yeah,
and it was
great.
The story was really poignant.
Yeah. And I almost stood up in the back of the room and said, "Gary, that's good. Let's call it quits there." You know, that George Costanza, "I'm out of here." But it was a great presentation. And then I also was able to put together a presentation where Lisa Foote and Justin Grammons talked about mobile and mobile development and how they could how radio could take advantage of many of the mobile opportunities that are out there, you know, not only to get their signal or their music or their content out via mobile, but also to help build relationships with the users of mobile. You know, tying that new technology into what would be considered an old or traditional technology. So, and I think that our broadcasting brethren were impressed. So I thank those folks for taking time out of their days to come over and spend a couple hours with those crazy, wacky radio folks.
Well, and when I finally found the Conclave on the web, I'm glad I didn't go, because there was right at the beginning here, it says handguns are expressly outlawed in any and all Conclave functions. So I would not have been able to go. And Graham with that 357 Magnum you keep in your trousers.
Yeah, you gotta love that.
It's just funny to see it called out.
There has been gunplay, you know.
Right. Oh my God. That just seemed funny. Well, you know, speaking of radio, Graham, you were talking about something Code Morphic had released.
Yeah, they just released what's called Public Radio Player 2.0 onto the App Store. I can send you the link, Steve. Maybe you want to put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
This is the latest, greatest version of what had been called the Tuner, but they're now calling it the Player. And they've added an all-new look and program guide and schedule information, previous episodes on demand, and better stream connections. And I tried it a little earlier when I was in a Wi-Fi network at a coffee shop here in Pequot Lakes, and was listening to The Current, and worked like a charm. And there's already a bunch of reviews up there on this new Player 2.0. You can get it as an update to the Tuner. That's the way I did it, I guess. I just updated to it. It really looks great. So I'm sure it'll be add to the popularity of that app, which I think is well over 2 or 3 million downloads now, at least. I don't even know the numbers lately. But one thing Bill Hyman, I should say, is the way his name is pronounced, from Code Morphic, said about it is that Code Morphic worked on it with the Berkman Center at Harvard, and that's Doc Searles, and something
right.
called the Public Radio Exchange. So this has been in the works for quite a while, and it's finally out, and I think people will like it.
You know what, Graham? I'm looking at the app. I got an update notice this weekend, and I downloaded it, and I hadn't looked at it until just now. And the on-demand thing, oh my God, this is fabulous. I mean, there's several things that I already listened to, This American Life and Talk of the Nation and the Car Talk and some other things. But you can just click on it and go in and say, I didn't hear that episode, and just listen to it. Fabulous.
I'll tell you guys a funny story. I'm a kind of a public radio junkie, and the other day I was cooking, and I had my iPhone, so I said, okay, I'm going to listen to Minnesota Public Radio, which by the way, has its own iPhone app
yep.
created by Code Morphic.
Yep.
The really funny thing I did was I grabbed my iPhone, fired up the app, activated it, you know, clicked play on the news channel and dropped it into my iPhone dock, which, you know, here's the punchline, that dock has a radio in it. So, you know, I could have just, you know, turned on the radio, but right. No, I had to like fire up the app on the iPhone, activate it, and then drop that into the dock. And that's Julio for you.
You are a super uber geek, Julio.
But, you know, I'm a huge fan of what Codemorphic people are doing on the iPhone. I wanted to throw in a mention of a similar situation that's also local. You guys have heard of Nabbit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nabbit. Yep. So Nabbit has their app, which gives you, you know, the sort of capability of finding out, you know, if you hear a song that's playing on the radio, you want to hear, you know, who the heck is playing that song. The Nabbit service with their iPhone app lets you do that. But
why wouldn't you use Shazam for that?
You can do that. And there are a number of options. And in fact, I wanted to sort of get to my second punchline here. There, Nabbit now has some competition from Griffin. Griffin is the very well-known maker of iPhone and Macintosh accessories, and they're getting into software a little bit, and they just released an iPhone app called IFM, and IFM mirrors the Nabbit app in some ways. It is another option to sort of find out, you know, pull up a list of the stations in your area and sort of see, you know, what is playing, you know, who the heck is that, who's playing that, you know, that really cool song. So there's a growing number of options on the iPhone, you know, Nabbit, local company, and now Griffin's IFM, which it just came out. I just downloaded it. And it just gives you a deeper connection with the radio, you know, content, you know, coming out of your car radio or whatever.
I know that Griffin has made the IFM accessory for iPods for a long time, which is like the separate box with an FM tuner in it. So does the iPhone app require that, do you know, or?
No, it doesn't. And that's where it's a little confusing, that there's the IFM attachment for iPods, which gives an iPod the radio tuning capability, and I actually have one of those. And now they have this IFM iPhone app, and their naming convention here is a little confusing because people are going to be confused. They're going to hear IFM, and they're going to ask, you know, do they mean the physical attachment for old style iPods? Do they mean the iPhone app? I'm not sure why they're creating such confusion like that, but, you know, be that as it may, the iPhone app they just released is very. I'm just starting to play with it, but it's very interesting and potentially useful. Although I have to say, I don't have a lot of use for commercial radio. I'm just kind of a public radio junkie. So the public radio player, I'm doing a Homer, you know, Homer reacting to donuts kind of a thing. I'm just salivating at the prospect of playing with that. I really appreciate you guys bringing that to my attention.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I used to have a Griffin Radio Shark. And I would use that specifically to record the programs that I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss, because I could have it would record them as an MP3 and then dump it right into iTunes. And that thing's been in my closet on the shelf for 2 years.
Mm. They were going to release a version of that that would support HD radio. I wonder whatever happened to that, but that would be kind of interesting if they did that.
What an app for?
No, they were going to release an updated version of the Radio Shark hardware that would tune HD radio the same way the upcoming Zune HD is going to tune HD radio.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, I was going to ask Julio. You have a chance to look at the new Best Buy HD radio they announced a couple weeks ago?
The small pocket size one. Yeah, it's the first one under $50.
Oh, the first portable one.
Yeah,
I haven't played with it, but I one has been offered to me. I should be getting one within the next few days to play with, but I'm not really terribly impressed with what I've read so far, because it just does HD radio, and it only does FM HD radio. It doesn't do AM HD radio, so what's up with that? It doesn't play MP3 files. It doesn't have a slot for a storage card, so you can't play MP3s on it. It's this very crippled device that only does one thing. And
kind of like a radio does, Julio.
Yeah, but no, but my,
you know,
my,
there are things out there that just do one thing.
Who wants that? But my point is, you know, save your money for one of Microsoft's Zune HD that plays high definition video. It has HD tuning capability. You guys know about iTunes tagging. Mm-hmm. You know, with the right HD hardware, like, so I played with a Sony clock radio iPhone dock kind of a thing that has HD radio capability. If you dock your iPod into this device or any number of others, including possibly that some other ones that have come up, if you dock your iPhone into one of these devices, hear a song you like, you press a tag button, that information gets saved on the iPhone, then you take your iPhone or your iPod to your computer, synchronize with iTunes, and it finds the song in the iTunes store and then prompts you to download it. So that's another, you know, we talked about Nabbit and Griffin's IFM. That's another way to sort of find out, you know, what the heck is that cool song that I'm hearing on the radio. There's a way to identify it and, in this case, you know, actually purchase it. So that's kind of cool.
Hey, Julio, I got an idea. Since you're going to join us every month and you get lots of free crap, let's say every month you give away a piece of the free stuff that you get to our Minovate listeners. Could you do that? You know, you get the free stuff, you get the docs, you get the radios. You can't possibly keep all that stuff.
I think he has to send them back, don't you?
Yeah, I typically have to send it back.
What if they got lost in the mail, if you know what I
mean? Yeah. So, no, but there, you know, we could do some minor, you know, I get t-shirts and you know, little accessories that I normally, you know, throw away, you know, flash drives and that sort of thing. So we could have little giveaways. In fact, I was planning to do the same thing on my blog. You know, here's this latest, you know, cool tchotchke or swag item that I got. And so rather than, you know, toss that stuff, we can figure
we'll
out.
We'll just call it What's in Julio's Drawer.
What's in Julio's Drawer? Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
But my job is torture sometimes because I get all this great hardware and typically in the case of Apple hardware, I get all this great hardware and then I have to, you know, send it back and, you know, shed a tear as I'm doing so. It's kind of hard.
One thing that came up when you were talking about HD radio is I really don't understand what the difference is. So I don't know, Phil or Julio, yeah, if you could kind of explain what makes it different than regular radio.
HD radio was really designed by Ibiquity Corporation, which is, you know, holds the patent on the version of HD radio that the U.S. has chosen to use. It was really, you know, spearheaded by the broadcast companies as a response to satellite radio. When satellite radio debuted, there was this great fear that swept over broadcast radio that they would put us out of business because they could offer, you know, umpteen channels on one receiver and, you know, no commercials and all that sort of thing. So in order to try and provide more variety and more, you know, formats to choose from, more radio outlets, the digital HD radio was designed that digitizes, obviously, with the old stream, be able to break it up into different segments. So a segment of the stream of the HD signal is the standard broadcast signal that we hear today that is a better quality signal. But then there's also the ability to segment it into HD1 and HD2, HD3, and have other radio stations that can be heard throughout, you know, that are sort of the sub carrier of the regular signal. So if you have an HD radio, you can hear the secondary signal from most companies. Most broadcasters are now broadcasting in HD. For example, Minneapolis has an all comedy channel. They have a blues channel. They have an 80s channel. They have a dance channel that are all sort of segments of other main channels out there. And they can only be heard with an HD receiver.
What about a Lawrence Welk channel?
I don't think anybody, you just hop into an elevator for that.
All right.
But right now, HD again was one of those things that was a response to another competition that really hasn't come to fruition. And right now, we just had at the Conclave, as a matter of fact, just saw a presentation from Jacobs Media on their latest tech survey where they, you know, survey radio listeners. And right now, after I believe it's been 4 years, maybe 5 years that they've been, 4 years that they've been pushing HD radio. And it has received about 2% awareness among the public. So it's not exactly lighting the place up because you have to buy new hardware.
And that's the reason that consumers haven't really gone for it. It sounds like Blu-ray to me.
Yeah, it's sort of that sort of thing. You have to upgrade to a new receiver. The auto industry has not embraced it to the extent that they did with XM, because XM, quite frankly, has more money to incentivize the auto industry to put the receivers in cars. Now, HD has made some headway in that realm. Some of the top line cars offer HD as an option. But it hasn't gained wide acceptance. And one of those reasons is the chipset was so stinking big, you couldn't get a portable version. The desktop thing was huge. It was clunky. It was hard to get HD signals to penetrate buildings. They're currently seeking upgrade in power. And, you know, it's sort of in I don't know, it's evolving. The question is it evolving fast enough to counter, you know, wide area, you know, networks and, you know, free public Wi-Fi where you can listen to whatever you want online from anywhere you want rather than being limited to a terrestrial signal. So,
well, my take on that is there's satellite radio versus HD radio. Satellite radio, I don't see it having much of a future. I think the whole thing is going to crash and burn eventually. HD radio, on the other hand, is, in my opinion, a more incremental and logical upgrade path for radio listeners. Over time, you know, it'll sort of become standard issue in more and more car models, I think, as people who have radios in their home, if their radios break down, they go out and buy a radio, and more often, you know, the logical thing to just grab off the shelf is an HD radio. And so I think it's not taking the market by storm by any means, but I think, you know, gradually, almost imperceptibly over time, it'll just gain a foothold and sort of become the de facto way to listen to radio, because the HD, the name HD radio is a little confusing because there's nothing high definition about it, but the audio fidelity, the quality of the sound is very, very, very nice compared to standard radio. It just sounds great. And at some point, you know, consumers, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we'll sort of look up HD radio will just be in their homes, and in some cases they won't even notice that it got there. So I think it's going to stick around, but it's just not taking off as quickly as the proponents of the technology hoped.
Well, the question is going to be, Julio, if it will take off fast enough for broadcasters to be able to afford it. It does represent a significant significant to radio broadcasters expense to keep it going, because it costs more to keep the transmitters cool. It runs at a much hotter level. It is somewhat crippling to AM radio. You are right, especially in the world of AM. When AM is broadcast in HD, it's incredible sounding. You would never, you know, you always had that high pitched, you know, static in an AM signal. You don't have that with HD. The downside is you sacrifice signal strength, meaning WCCO, for example. When we put WCCO on HD, we lost a significant part of our audience because they couldn't hear it anymore. In fact, I believe, I'm not sure, and I may be speaking out of turn, but I think CCO has turned off their HD signal on their AM because it just limited the signal strength. So,
is there any data that can come over that channel?
Well, that's another issue that they're looking into. Broadcasters looking into, is there a better use than or an additional use to provide data streams? But
well,
we also
traffic data, aren't they?
Yeah, there's traffic data already out there. We've also got, you know, broadcast also has the RDS system, which is what, you know, some stations or some vehicles have RDS radios that displays the title and artist of the song or the station you're listening to on that digital readout on your dashboard. So there's a lot of things out there and we had a wonderful presentation again at the Conclave by RAB President Jeff Haley. Jeff Healy's kind of dead now, but talking about all of these opportunities that we have out there, yet broadcast is in that shrinking mode where they don't want to invest in things because they're just trying to make that bottom line from quarter to quarter. It's a struggling industry right now. That's not to say that it's going out of business anytime soon, because I don't think it is. It's reinventing itself, but it's interesting to see what people want to invest in and what they don't want to invest in. But the main thing is the consumer has got to want it. The consumer has got to see the benefit of having it. And right now, I don't think consumers see that benefit of HD radio.
But I'll mention the Microsoft, the Zune HD that is coming out that has HD radio capability. I think that might get HD radio a little bit more on the consumer map, increase consumer awareness, because that device is getting quite a lot of good buzz. I'm really looking forward to playing with that.
Yeah, but will it get more buzz than the iPod Touch? Because that's the situation that it stands right now. And Zune has struggled in light of the iPod, has it not?
I wouldn't presume to declare the Zune HD good or bad without having actually seen it. But from what I've been able to read about it so far, I think it's the standard. Microsoft trying something once, twice, and finally getting it right the third time. It looks to be very, very hot in a number of ways. The HD radio is just kind of a bonus add-on. The form factor, the styling, the HD video on the thing, all of that is very cool. But just having that HD radio on there will get people sort of asking the question, "Oh gosh, what is this HD radio thing?" But right. You're right. If HD radio were built into Apple gear, it would certainly be more significant than built into Microsoft gear.
Don't believe me. Yeah, if radio of any kind was built into the iPod, everybody would be a lot happier. And I honestly believe consumers would be happier, because it is the most requested option of any MP3 player is an FM add-on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they would sell less music on the iTunes store.
There's no, that's that. The problem. Tim, I
believe you've hit on why it's not part of the iPod.
Yeah, I bet you that's why Steve Jobs said no.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure. Listen, just because the consumer wants it doesn't necessarily mean it's good for Apple. So,
we lost Graham. He's in his car, or is going to get in his car on the way back. And
oh, I'm sorry.
I texted him to ask if he wanted to join back up, because we're going to have to bring this to a close. Because we're going to run up against our time, but he had a couple of things that he wanted to add, which was the social media breakfast next 31st. Friday, the 31st. No, a week from Friday, mm-hmm. right? On the 31st. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is he said, "Hey, did you hear about the funding of an internet company by Twin Cities Angels?" Which was a first to his knowledge, because they've been in the med tech space. And I said, "Yeah, who's that?" He said, "TST Media." And I said, "Yeah, that's right. I interviewed Justin Coffenberg, the co-founder and CEO, and talked with his biz dev guy, Pat Peschel. And I'm going to go down on Tuesday to get a back-end demo of what these guys have. They started off in the sports space called Team Sports Technology. And they've morphed into TST Media because they created this engine in Ruby on Rails that allows them to very, very quickly set up individual social network sites and fan sites. And they've done one for Minnesota Hockey and all kinds of different sports organizations. And now they're verticalizing. And so I'm going to go down and get a back-end demo. So I'll be doing a post about that on Minovate during the week here. But that was a nice little thing. They actually moved from Eau Claire, started in Eau Claire, moved to the Twin Cities, ostensibly for people and a bigger network and so forth. But so they got a nice first round.
Yeah, that's great.
That's fabulous.
Wonderful. Always good to see somebody, finally getting where they need to be. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, anything else you guys got that you want to
I wanted to say also the thanks to Julio, because Julio, you're probably the first non-radio person I've had a good discussion with about HD radio, and it was great to have that perspective. Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
It was great to have you on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Like I said, I'm a big fan of you guys and the show, so I'm honored to be on the show occasionally.
Oh, it's our honor. And be sure to send those free iPods our way.
Yes, yes.
And as soon as you get that Apple tablet, we'll be looking for that.
And
oh, yeah, I'd love to get that. Yeah.
Yep. And just
do you really think, Julio, that they're going to do one?
Yeah, I think it's, you might have heard of everybody's complaining, you know, why doesn't Apple build keyboard, you know, external keyboard support into the iPhone? I think they will at some point. And I'm talking strictly out of my ass here, but my guess is they're going to wait till they release this larger tablet device that will, you know, by default have that external keyboard support built in. And that keyboard actually exists, by the way. Apple has a compact Bluetooth wireless keyboard that I'm just dying to use with an iPhone. But when they release the tablet, my guess is they'll support the external tablet and they'll say, oh, by the way, we're now supporting external keyboard. We're building that into the iPhone and the iPod Touch as well. So
why have they held that back? Because it seems like such an obvious thing that users want.
And again, totally out of my ass, but I think they're just waiting to do that with the tablet and then by extension, throw that out to the iPhone users as well. I think that's what's happening.
So yeah. the time is finally becoming right, I guess.
I think there's a whiteboard at Apple HQ somewhere, and they have a long list of features that they want to roll out, and they have some very strong opinions about the timing. We're going to do this one, and then we're going to do this one. We're going to kind of dribble this stuff out and sort of keep people hungry, keep people thirsty, and just keep, you know, having them ask for more. And I think this is one of those things, you know, we are going to do this. We're just not going to do it now. We're going to do it, you know, X date in the future.
Well, and here's what my gut tells me too. I was really surprised when I was standing up giving that talk to the social media breakfast and using the Keynote iPhone app and trying to get a Wi-Fi connection because everybody was using Wi-Fi, and I kept having to try, and I finally got it like 4 minutes before I was going to start to present. And I asked myself the question, why, now that the Bluetooth 3.0 spec is out, I was wondering why aren't they using Bluetooth for apps like that? Because it's, you know, it's a high speed transport. I mean, it's almost Wi-Fi in terms of its speed and capability. And I'm wondering if they're going to build in 3.0, maybe there's some battery management thing and build 3.0 in and then release it. Maybe that's part of Snow Leopard or something. I don't know.
But I've struggled with that, using your iPhone or iPod Touch as a Keynote remote enough. I'm just to the point where I've given up on that, because it's a very cool idea in theory, but every single time I'm giving a talk or something, I'm always, you know, desperately struggling with that thing up to the very last minute.
Me
and,
too.
And, yep. And 50% of the time, I just kind of ditch the idea and do something different. And so they got to tweak that, because it doesn't work as well as it should.
Yeah. Yep. Well, guys.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you very
much. This has been great.
And I'm glad to see that Julio has the main criteria for being on the Minivac Gang podcast.
Well,
the ability to talk out of his ass.
Not only that, but you know what?
We've been doing that for months.
That's right. And we need to end with a message to Mrs. Julio. Thank you for letting him carve out an hour. We tried to stretch it even further so he could shirk all husbandly duties. But
actually,
now he's got to have to get back.
Just leave his headphones on and act like he's talking for the next
exactly.
hour.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I don't want to take too much time away from my wife, because if you look on my posters, the woman is wielding power tools. So I got to.
There you go. All right. Well, have a great rest of the weekend, guys. Thanks much.
Thanks.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Take
have
care.
A good week.
Bye-bye.
Is there anything they can't do?